and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip.
It's not always sunny. Yeah, sometimes there's a storm. But ain't it kind of funny how a cold day keeps you warm?
Notorious for its long winters, with cold and darkness that can leave some of us feeling isolated and depressed. For those who've discovered silent sports, a long winter can be pure bliss. A combination of awe-inspiring stillness coupled with exercise that makes the most of the natural beauty that surrounds us. While silent sports happen all year long, including kayaking, hiking, and open water swimming, the winter month presents unique challenges and opportunities for rough stress and absorb nature in its purest form, outside of a gym setting and away from crowds. Winter silence is, therefore, ideal for social gatherings from cross-country skiing, snowshoeing, biking, hiking, and more. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shireen Seewert, and we welcome listeners of the West Side. Once the snow falls in North Central and Western Wisconsin, it's time to get out and have some fun. Any outdoor aerobic activity without a motor could really be considered a silent sport, and there are plenty of ways to get involved. None of these sports are terribly exotic or unusual. For the most part, their popularity is just not well established, but growing steadily. What does make silent sports unique is their participants' distinct vibe, specifically their dedication to a whole range of nature-oriented outdoor fitness activities. And silent sport enthusiasts say they're out there for the joy of it. The exertion, the exhilaration, the panoramic views, and the fresh air they can wrap their lungs around. Today, we explore the world of silent sports with the help of three guests. Bruce Steinberg is the editor of Silent Sports Magazine, a long-running publication that provides solid, reliable, and timely regional information on aerobic activities that don't rely on motorized gear. The magazine presents stories on silent sports events, places, and people. And stories that focus on where we self-propel ourselves in many different ways. Bruce, thank you for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Andrea Larson is also here today, the executive director of Iron Bowl, a Wausau-based organization that hosts a number of extreme outdoor adventure challenges throughout the year, including the winter months. Andrea, welcome back to Route 51. It's great to see you.
It's great to be back.
Our third guest today is Mike Schuldes, the Trails President of the Mercer Cross Country Ski Association. It's a community-focused organization that hosts and promotes skiing and snowshoeing events throughout the winter season each year. Mike, welcome to the program. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners with questions for our guests can join the conversation by calling us at 800-780-9742 or by emailing us at ideas@wpr.org. I apologize for the noise in the background. We are working on that technical issue. So I'd like to start by explaining exactly what we mean by silent sports. So Mike, maybe help us out here. What do we mean when we talk about silent sports? What is it? It sounds like it's simple, but we were having kind of a hard time defining it when we were talking about this in preparation for the program.
Well, one way to think of it is self-propelled sports, where you get out and you exercise and you enjoy nature and the beauty of the surroundings and, you know, work up a little sweat look around and enjoy the trees and the birds and get exhilarated.
Ah, wonderful. It sounds wonderful. And Bruce, I guess my question is, you know, there's some things that seem like they might be a silent sport, but maybe they aren't. I was thinking things like snowboarding and ice skating, but those, I guess, are really not considered silent sports. Why is that?
Well, I'd be careful with ice skating because we have something called Nordic skating, which allows people to basically skate ski on ice. And in times when we have the cold and frozen lakes but no snow, you can enjoy cross-country skiing, so to speak, on Nordic skates. It's a big deal up in Wisconsin. So as far as, you know, for the magazine, I have to determine what the readership is interested in. And it seems that golfers want to convince me most of all that theirs is a silent sport.
It's not?
Well, when you hit a bad shot, it gets awfully loud.
There you go. What about things like snowboarding and downhill skiing? Andrea, would you consider that a silent sport, or is that not part of it?
I would not. I would say silent sports are, you know, with that self-propelled, it requires you, as Mike said earlier, to work up a little sweat, get your heart going, and get that cardiovascular exercise that when you don't have to work to get up the hill, you don't have that going for you.
Okay, so maybe if you had to climb the hill by yourself, we could probably add those in there. Well, I'd like to know a little bit more about the organizations that you're associated with, too. So, Mike, tell us a little bit about MECCA. What is it, and what do you guys do up there?
Well, the MECCA Club has been around for nearly 50 years, and we're a volunteer-driven organization. We have 21 kilometers of cross-country ski trails that are groomed regularly for both diagonal striders and skate skiers. We've got 1, 2, and 3 mile snowshoe trail loops as well through the woods. And we're very focused on the community. We sponsor community outreach programs to get kids to learn how to cross country ski and collaborate with organizations like the North Lakeland Discovery Center, who have naturalist programs out on our trails.
Wonderful. Andrea, tell us a little bit about Iron Bull and what you do there.
We're a new nonprofit that started up just a couple of years ago to promote outdoor adventure sports in the central Wisconsin area. We've been blessed with a lot of unique features by nature that we want to highlight via different avenues of silent sports.
Great. And Bruce, Silent Sports Magazine has been around for several decades. You've been part of it for quite a long time. How did your interest begin there? How did you get involved?
The magazine started in 1984 by founder Greg Marr, who sadly passed way too young in 2003. I did talk with him. You couldn't do the American Birkbeiner ski race without knowing what Silent Sports Magazine is all about. And I eventually submitted a story to him, which he accepted. So, you know, the magazine has been there to place a focus on the upper Midwest silent sports community, the people, the places, the businesses, the events, the chambers. And as the managing editor, I've just been blessed with meeting people like Andrea and Mike, who are such leaders in their communities and do such great things for their the towns that they live in, not just advancing silent sports, but the well-being of everybody and the environment that they do their silent sports in.
So Andrea, I know that you participate in a lot of different sports. That's just really such a big part of your life. But what is it about the silent sports of winter that are so special, that hold an allure for you?
Well, first of all, it gives you a reason to get outside when there's all these reasons not to get outside. It's dark, it's cold, but you find that often when you get out there, you're so glad that you did. And so you're able to maintain that healthy lifestyle through those cold winter days. But once you're out there, you often find that there's nowhere else you'd rather be, whether it's the solitude in the woods, listening to the chickadees out there, or even in complete darkness with just the moonlight to guide your way. It's just a unique experience, and something like being out there after a fresh snowfall or even after an ice storm, there's just such nature and beauty that you can only see when you're out on the trails or in the middle of the woods.
It's a different view, that's for sure, when you get into the woods. I'd like to get into some specifics about some options that we have available to us here in Wisconsin. Mike, if you had to pick the easiest one, the easiest thing, silent sport that anybody could do, what do you think that would be?
Well, my mind goes to snowshoeing. You know, if you dress, warm and have a nice pair of winter boots, you can strap on a pair of snowshoes and go for a hike through the woods. I see people using ski poles or hiking poles to steady themselves on when they get to hills. And I've heard a lot of people to say that they've aged out of skiing, that they used to ski a lot when they were, you know, in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and now they're snowshoeing more. Although having said that, I've got a lot of friends who are in their 70s and 80s and 90s who are still skiing. So, snowshoeing is inexpensive and a nice way to get out and get fresh air.
Oh, absolutely. And as a somebody who's not very athletic, I can say that snowshoeing is one of those things that you can start slow and just, you know, take it at your own pace. I don't know if they still do it, but the first time I was ever introduced to cross country skiing was as a child when I was at the Wausau School Forest. They taught all of the kids to ski out there, and I'm curious. You all cross country ski. You all have done it, right? So. Do you remember the first time you ever strapped on skis, what it felt like? Bruce, what was it like?
Well, two stories. When I was an undergrad, I worked as an orderly in a hospital, and there was a blizzard in 1979 in the Chicago area that reached down to Urbana, where I lived. And I actually happened to have a pair of cross-country skis that I skied down the main street to get to work. But I really got into the sport years ago when I had a running injury, and I just happened to be up in Hayward at the New Moon Ski and Bike, and because I just liked the way the building looked. Then I met someone who worked there named Marsha, who still is around town there, who said, you ought to try skate skiing. And she explained it to me, and so I did. And I remember taking a few awkward steps on skate skiing, and I looked at the tracks and I said, that is cool. And, you know, to put in and to add to that question you asked of Andrea, I think all silent sports can accommodate the beginner. And you will find that the people out there will welcome the beginners at any speed. And people shouldn't be afraid to try it, no matter what they're wearing, no matter the gear, and they can get rentals. But the experience of the movement, the playing with gravity, moving through just beautiful landscapes, it's like Andrea said, once you start experiencing it, the people who complain about winter will suddenly stop complaining about it, perhaps, and realize, man, there is a lot to do out here.
And winter can be very difficult for people who don't get outside. So you know, that is a really great point. And Mike, Bruce was just talking about the cross-country skiing and mentioned skate skiing. Can you explain the difference between those things? What's skate skiing compared to what, you know, the rest of us do when we get out there?
Well, we at MECA, we focus on two techniques. One is the diagonal stride. Classic skiers that skis in a set of tracks that we groom into the trails, and then the skate skiers propel themselves on a little shorter ski, and they use a skating kick to propel themselves. You know, they use the poles as well, but it's more of a sidekick, and we groom a flat skate lane for them that doesn't have tracks. So our trail system has both a track set for diagonal striders and a skate lane for skaters.
Okay. Thank you. You're listening to Mike Shouldis, Bruce Steinberg, and Andrea Larson. They're our guests today on Route 51, exploring the world of silent sports and all the opportunities Wisconsin's natural landscape presents. When we return, we'll hear about some easy ways to get started and tips for making it all affordable. Your questions and comments are welcome. You can join us by calling 800-780-9742. You can also send an email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Lamp is burning low upon my tabletop. The snow is softly falling. The air is still in the silence of my room. I hear your voice softly calling. Thank you. Some folks like the summertime when they can walk about. Strolling through the meadow green, it's pleasant, there's no doubt. But give me the winter time when the snow's on the ground. For I found a winter snooze on the ground. I traced the little footprints in the snow. I found a little footprints in the snow, Lord. Just that happy day when Nelly lost her way. I found a winter snooze on the ground.
We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward, welcoming listeners of the West Side. Andrea Larson, Mike Scholdes, and Bruce Steinberg are our guests today as we continue our discussion on silent sports. What would you like to know? You can call us at 800-780-9742 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Andrea, you mentioned earlier Iron Bowl started in Wausau just a few years ago, and you deliberately chose Central Wisconsin for these programs and competitions. So what is it about the natural landscape of Central Wisconsin that makes it such a good fit compared to other locations?
So when we're talking about all four seasons, Central Wisconsin has a number of waterways that come through, not just the Wisconsin River, but there's several other, including the Rib River and others, as well as Rib Mountain State Park is one of the highest points in the state of Wisconsin. And that is something, you know, some of those unique features are things that no matter how great your clubs are around you, you can't replicate those natural features. But we also have some great organizations in the area. One of the local mountain biking clubs, Seawalk Central Wisconsin Off-Road Cycling Coalition, maintains over 60 miles of mountain bike trails, and several, three of those trail systems are used throughout the winter months as well. And there's also other clubs and organizations such as the Wausau Nordic Ski Club. There's the Whitewater Corporation as well. And we just have a lot of those unique features as well as, you know, the in addition to the state park property, county parks as well.
You mentioned fat tire biking or biking, and I want to talk about that because I think probably 10 years ago, people thought you were out of your mind if they saw you riding around on a bike in the middle of winter. And fat tire biking really changed all of that. Bruce, when you're writing about fat tire biking, how do you explain the difference between a regular bike and a fat tire bike? And why is a fat tire bike good for winter?
I don't think there's such a thing as a regular bike anymore. But fat tire bike has what people from the old days might call balloon tires, except they're well-treaded, they're very wide, and they ride on very low pressure, I think under 5 PSI. And, you know, it's just another way for cyclists to get out there on the trails. And at first, I think there was some resistance, you know, interfering maybe with skiers or hikers, and then acceptance. And I think the various ski resorts have started grooming. We had a story in the January issue of Silent Sports Magazine by Mark Parman on Canva and what they do for fat tire bikes. And they groom especially for that. And you get more trails, more kilometers in the winter because marshes have frozen over, areas that you cannot travel to in warmer weather. So again, it's an example of silent sports, not just expanding cycling as something to do, but also into the season and where you can go.
And Mike, since you're really involved in those trails with Mecca, how is the fat tire bike community getting along, so to speak, with the skiers and snowshoers on those trails?
Well, some of the areas, you know, we here around Mercer and north and south of us, some of the Nordic centers really specialize in fat biking. Windman Trails just south of us in Manitouish Waters has an incredible trail system. And north of us, Copper Peak Trail System is used, and that's very mountainous. And so some of the trail systems specialize in fat biking.
Sure. Andrea, what do you look for in a good fat tire bike for winter? Or does it have to be a fat tire bike? Or are there others to consider?
So as Bruce mentioned, it's those wider tires and that lower air pressure that are key. So the reason for that is so that you don't damage the trails and cause ruts. Because if someone goes and bikes with a more narrow tire or a higher air pressure than advised, what that'll do is that'll basically ruin the trails for the next people to come along. So that's ultimately what the desire is. And that's what really is special about the fat bikes. But as far as, you know, components go, you know, people are always looking for lighter bikes. Something unique about fat tire bikes is you often don't need any suspension system because those wheels have so much a cushion on them. And like you guys were saying earlier, is you can go to places that you couldn't normally go in the summer months. Just yesterday, I was using my fat tire bike to bike on a river that was groomed. So it really does take you to places that you cannot go any other time of the year.
Bruce, if you were going to be writing a story about fat tire biking, what would you tell people about what they need? What do they need for gear to keep warm? Because, I mean, biking is colder. You've got the wind coming at you. What's the best stuff to look for?
One of our riders, Kirsten Kochner, who's just a fabulous cyclist and likes to promote all things cycling, wrote a story just on this in the magazine, and her emphasis was on layers, because as you ride and where you go in woods, outside of woods, into the wind, what you will face will change. So if you're thinking of just one warm something to wear, you're going to get in trouble. It's the ability to have multi-layers that you can easily take on and take off to help you adjust as you go. So mountain bike, fat tire biking really is not about speed. It's about adventure and seeing things that you don't ordinarily see in conditions you don't ordinarily have. So it's the layering aspect, including, you know, the bar mitts for your hands, which are basically built into the handlebars that you slip your hands into. Takes away the wind chill, coverings for eyes, your face, and then if you warm up, which you very well may do, you just simply take these off and store them in one of your many saddlebags that you'll have.
Mike, let's talk about etiquette, some rules that people need to keep in mind when either they're fat tire biking or they're cross-country skiing. Where do people find out about these, the rules, the do's and don'ts?
Well, safety is always a consideration. If you're going to go out and say cross country ski by yourself, you know somebody should know that you're going out and what time you're going to come back, because the hundreds of kilometers of trails are not patrolled typically by a safety patrol, and you know the different. Different trail systems have different rules regarding dogs. At Mecca Trails, we're very dog friendly. And we say that dogs are welcome as long as they're accompanied by a well-behaved companion trained to pick up after them. each trail system has probably different rules. Occasionally you have to pass a person and you just have to kind of bark out on your right, as you go by them on the right, so that you don't surprise them. It's a fun sport to do, you know, either solitary by yourself or in a group of people. We've got groups that go out at night with wearing headlamps and they just have a ball.
What would you like to add to that? Andrea, what would you like to add to that?
Another thing to consider with regards to etiquette is making sure that you respect trail closures or recommendations on when to go onto the trails. Particularly when things get warm, you can easily leave ruts or do what's called post-holing if you're walking on trails. So you just want to be vigilant of that you're not causing the trails to be left in a condition such that the people behind you cannot enjoy them to the same degree. So usually the way that that's communicated is, in addition to maybe signs at the trailhead, if the whatever club organizes or manages that property or maintains that property, communicates that via Facebook or websites. So you can find out sometimes after they groomed, they ask that the trail set up, which means basically they harden. So if you followed the groomer and you went right after them, you would cause those ruts in the trail. But if you allow it to freeze, then the next person that goes on it after it freezes, it doesn't cause those ruts.
So that's all really good advice. Bruce, where would you suggest people who are new to this kind of thing, where would they go to find out this information? Where do you go to find out this stuff that you need to keep in mind?
Well, first they subscribe to the magazine because we have great writers. I hope you don't mind that I said that. I'm proud of the magazine because it does give information for the beginners. It's not just about the elites, and the elites are very down to earth. But, you know, all the places that have been mentioned by Andrea and Mike, they have pros there who, you know, give lessons, have rentals, so it's not expensive. It's just about getting rid of the fear factor. You know, no one's expecting you to telemark down the steepest hill when you start out. There's a lot of community involved and a good feeling for that. I mean, you can, you know, it just begins with that first step to talking to somebody, anybody, whether, you know, cross-country headquarters or Mecca, Windman. You know, it's just ask, how do I begin? And they will be happy to help. That was my experience, exactly my experience. It took me 16 minutes to do my first mile on the very first roller skis I ever had. And I did my first quarter-lope race all wrong with the technique. And there are videos out there and people willing to help. You couldn't find a friendlier community than the silent sports community. And that's not just bluster, it's the truth.
So how can somebody get a basic, inexpensive start into, say, cross-country skiing, Mike? What's the easiest way to just jump right into it? Is there a way to do it on a budget?
Yeah, like as Bruce mentioned, most of the trail systems have rentals real close by. And, you know, just north of Mercer in the Ironwood area, the ABR Nordic Center has got an incredible ski shop with all kinds of rental equipment, and they've got instructors on staff. So somebody can get a beginner lesson very inexpensively and go through their beautiful trails. So that's what I would suggest is grab a buddy and find a rental spot. The rental shops will, you know, size you up for the right kind of gear and point you in the right direction. And lessons are inexpensive just to get some basic technique down.
And one quick question too. You got to help me settle an argument here. Waxable or waxless skis? What's better?
Who are you asking?
Bruce, you could answer that.
Both and everything. The beauty of waxless and waxable and also skating and striding is that the more you have, the more places you can go and the more conditions you can deal with. Some days are great for classics. Some days are great for skating. Some days are great for both. And when you get, you know, in the upper 20s, low 30s, you know, you would probably go towards a waxless. Of course, they have this thing now called skin skis for classic, which has been the recent technological rage. But it's not either or. It's, you know, what's out your window and what is going to work best for the day. And there have been some days when I've done both. Those are the best days. So I wouldn't limit it to either or is the bottom line.
Okay. Good to know. Mike, I was just thinking that you had mentioned dogs a little while ago. And what's the ski joring? I've heard of this skiing with a dog. Is that something that people do a lot, or is it popular?
Well, it's a fun sport to watch. I've never tried it, but we've got ski jorers out at Mecca Trails, and you have an energetic dog who wants to run, and they're harnessed up you're tethered to their skier who's skiing behind them. And a good medium-sized dog can pull a skier with great fun. It's exciting to watch.
Oh, I bet it's fun. Andrea, have you ever done that, or do you know anybody who has skiing with the dog?
I have not. When I went to school up at Michigan Tech, they did have trails there dedicated for ski joring, and there was a number of people that went out on it, and it's a good way for your well-trained dog to burn some energy.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like it. So Bruce, what are some of the best spots in the state for cross-country skiing? What do you recommend as a really fantastic place to go?
Well, my sad confession is I live in northern Illinois. yeah, I know. Gasp. But we love Wisconsin, and you know, from here we like to go to Nordic, McMillar, in the southern Kettle Moraine area. The Kettle Moraine area, I mean, it's just an extensive area. Greenbush, Lapham Peak with extensive snowmaking and lighting. It's hard to find a bad place because all these places have great grooming, great tracks, and you know, if you find a place that doesn't groom, then my God, just snap on your backcountry skis, which can be very inexpensive or very expensive depending on what you want. Basically, where there's snow, you can go and inexpensively, and it doesn't have to be fast. Going slow and sightseeing and stopping to smell the snowflakes. I love Winter Park, the Mecca Trails, Windman. It's endless on places to go, and it's all good.
You're listening to Route 51 with Bruce Steinberg, Andrea Larson, and Mike Shuldis. It's a discussion on making the most of silent sports opportunities in Wisconsin. Your questions and comments are welcome, too. Join us by calling 800-780-9742. You can also send an email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
The snow is snowing. Wind is blowing, but I can weather the storm. What do I care how much it may storm? I've got my love to keep me warm.
In the wintertime, when all the leaves are brown, and the wind blows, and the birds have all flown for the summer. I'm calling.
We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward, welcoming listeners from the West Side. Mike Shuldis, Bruce Steinberg, and Andrea Larson are our guests today on Route 51 as we continue our discussion on silent sports and winter outdoor recreation opportunities in our area. You can join the conversation, too, by emailing ideas@wpr.org or join us by phone at 800-780-9742. I'd like to ask you about people who have physical challenges, people with disabilities. What kinds of opportunities are available for those folks in our area? How inclusive is the silent sports community? Andrea, what do you know about that?
Well, as Bruce mentioned earlier, the silent sports community is extremely welcoming, and there are ways to be able to get out even if you do have some sort of disability. As Mike was talking about earlier, that snowshoeing is something that, doesn't take a lot of skill. The overused phrase is, if you can walk, you can snowshoe. So there are a number of people that, can still get out and snowshoe. I was snowshoeing last year with someone with Parkinson's that has, some limitations on mobility. Also, Bruce can probably talk a little bit more about sit skiing and the opportunities that there are for people that have a handicap to still go out and cross country ski as well.
Oh, sure. Bruce, what do you know about that?
Well, that is one of the things that's heading in the right direction. Just quickly, the National Interscholastic Cycling Association, or NICA, we had some stories in which, this is for young girls, in particular, grit girls riding together, where there was a young woman who had a prosthetic arm doing great on a bicycle. I'm proud to have stories by Cindy Dillenschneider and her husband, Jason Mahoney. They have created something called the One-Arm Freedom Paddle, which has allowed people who have a missing limb or have some problem with it, who can get into a kayak or a canoe and just do great. paddling along with family members who are able-bodied. With the sit ski, basically it's a chair attached to skis that are set to fit the distance of classic skis, and you double pole as you go along. You can have a guide to help you if you need help going up the hills. The American Birkbeiner and other ski races have events just for that. And just one incredible note on that is there is an outstanding athlete, a gold medalist Paralympic athlete named Dan Knosen, who lost both legs in an IED explosion as a Navy SEAL in Afghanistan. And he skied the American Birkbeiner Classic Ski Race, which is 55 kilometers long and has got challenging uphills and downhills. He did it in 3 hours and 50 minutes in 2016, which anybody, able-bodied or not, would be glad to have. So there are programs in all over the state of Wisconsin and Minnesota and Michigan that want to make it so people with disabilities can enjoy sports in winter and warm weather time, not just by themselves, but with their families and friends.
That's so inspiring to hear about. Just wonderful. Mike, let's talk a little bit about the Berkey. For people who maybe have heard about it, but they don't know a whole lot about what happens there. What happens during the Berkey? What is it that draws so many people from all over the country to this event every year?
Well, it's an incredible community event, you know, thousands of participants. And as Bruce said, the 55-kilometer event is, you know, quite an athletic feat to compete. And, of course, they've got a variety of shorter races and fun races, including the Barky Berkey for you to go out with your dog. But it, as you said, it draws people from all 50 states, and it's just an incredible economic driver for northern Wisconsin and the Hayward area.
Well, and that's an interesting point, because when we think about silent sports, it's easy to think about them as something that you just do by yourself, a very, very solo endeavor. But there's really a whole community aspect here. Andrea, what is that community culture like? I mean, you plan events that draw in people from all over the place. What does it feel like?
So it's awesome to be able to go out with like-minded people that want to be able to not just be outside, but look at lifelong activity and fitness. And so for me, I get to often go out with a couple other moms. I pull my 3.5-year-old son in a $5 plastic sled, and we go out and enjoy some camaraderie on the trails. And, you know, it looks different, you know, for other people, but it's basically getting a group of like-minded people enjoying nature outside while doing something healthy. So it's great to be able to, you know, not just talk about skiing, but for me, talking about being a mom or other topics that we can chat on the trails and enjoy that nature and activity together.
Sounds like it's really a great way to connect with other people. I think, too, in many cases, a silent sports culture really infuses Wisconsin communities with small businesses that really stake their success on providing the silent sports crowd with the products and services that they enjoy. Bruce, how strong is the correlation between these activities and the economic health of the small communities in our state and really the state overall?
Gosh, we had a story on that. I think it brought in like $7.8 billion to the state of Wisconsin. Mike McFadden wrote a story on that in our magazine, and it's just amazing. And you got the Berkey started in 1973 as an example with, I think, 34 to 35 skiers. The main Berkey on Saturday now has 10,000 skiers. The Coeur d'Alopet, which is a half distance, also finishing on the main street in Hayward, has over 3,000. And Andrea said Barna Berkey, which focuses on the children. You have ski joring. You have a race called the Prince Haakon, which is only 15 kilometers to allow people to get a taste of the sport. With all those people coming in, the businesses just love it, and thriving hotels, restaurants, you name it. And And it's not just winter sports, but the American Brookbinder Skiing Foundation is a year-round thing, which it's not just one and done in February. So you'll have cycling events, running events, trail marathon events, the Canva Trail events. And I think this also helps other ski races attract people because people want to do more. And one last thing, it is great for spectating. If you want to get introduced to this sport and know what the energy is all about, you got to be on Main Street when the people are coming in, or volunteer at one of the feed stations. I did that 2 years ago and had the opportunity to see Olympian gold medalist Kicken Randall whiz by and see the fastest to the medium to the slower skiers go by, including a gentleman named Ernie St. Germain, who has done every single Brookbinder since 1973. It's just a great community.
Andrea, I saw you nodding your head, and I'm imagining you're thinking about the Iron Bowl events that you have and the energy that comes from the spectators who come to cheer on the athletes that are there. You know, how important is that energy to those events?
Yes, so behind every racer, there's a whole, you know, team of people that not only are there on race day, but have gotten that person to the start line. And it's very inspiring to hear each individual's story of, you know, why they got into the sport. Just heard about someone that was, you know, flabbergasted by a roommate that could run an hour, and she went out for a first run. She could only go a mile. It took her 12 minutes, but now she's training for an 80-hour expedition adventure race. So there's not just the people out there on the race course racing that provide that energy, but yes, all the people behind them. And yes, as a mom too, having your family there and seeing them at the finish line or along the course just means a lot as well.
Getting back to the economic aspect of things, Mike, how do you have a sense of how important silent sports are to Mercer and the Northwoods in general? I mean, how important is it to the economic climate that you have these opportunities there?
Well, it rounds out the winter experience. So there's something for everyone. You know, families come up, drive up from either Illinois or Iowa or southern Wisconsin, and some people will ice fish and some people will cross country ski or snowshoe, and then there's motorized sports aficionados as well. So it gives the visitor a whole panorama of things that they can do when they're visiting the area.
Bruce, I'm curious how the pandemic has affected the silent sports as a whole. Do you think that, I mean, group events have been impacted, obviously, but do you think that popularity has increased because of our changes, our social changes in the last 2 years?
So many writers for the magazines have submitted stories about the amazing increase in outdoor activity, whether it's hiking, cycling, and skiing, just because the outdoors are safer. People are looking for things to do. COVID, I mean, if there's a positive aspect, which is a tough thing to say, it has gotten people to look out their windows a little bit more and then get outside. And this is a trend all over the country, not just the upper Midwest. For me, the downside is I haven't been able to meet these fabulous writers I've got writing for the magazine. I've just begun to start meeting some. And then equipment may be harder to get, perhaps, because of what's going on. But overall, people are just getting out there and taking advantage of the trails.
Andrea, Iron Bowl has some winter events coming up. I'd like you to share some information about that. What's happening next?
So right around the corner, next weekend, January 22nd, we have our second edition of the Rib Mountain Adventure Challenge winter event. And that is an adventure race. So you're using a map and compass to navigate an unmarked course as a team. You can be soloist or up to four people. And that is trekking, which is on foot, however fast you want to go. as well as paved bike surfaces. We also have an event the first Sunday in March called the Last Hurrah. That is back from last year, where it's a fat bike option, or they can snowshoe. And we've been able to use the Northern Lights demo fleet, so we can offer free snowshoes to those that sign up for that event if you want to give snowshoeing a try.
Neat. Mike, you've got a Winterfest coming up. What's happening there, and do you have any other events planned?
Yeah, our Winterfest has two formats. We have a virtual Winterfest going on right now through February 18th, and we've got a 5-kilometer, 11-kilometer, and a 15-kilometer course all marked out with intersection signs directing people. And then plus we've got the non-competitive Mercer Springs Snowshoe Tour, which is not timed. And it's just go out and snowshoe on our 1, 2, and 3 mile loops. We've got the Winterfest live on February 5th. And so we've got timed 5K and 15K races for both striders and skaters.
Sounds like there's a lot of things coming up and really something for everyone. We have a few minutes before we close, and I'm really curious. I'd like to ask you each about the best experience that you've ever had in a silent sports activity. What memory comes to mind when you think of the most wonderful experience you ever had engaging in a silent sport? Bruce, what about you?
This one is easy. A friend of mine and I were scheduled for the pre-Berkey, and the snow was like concrete, and I had to get to the Mora of Vasalopit the next day because I had a fundraiser I was doing, so I didn't want to injure myself. And a friend and I were traveling to Mora, and we looked out the window and said, what is that? And it was the Namakagan River frozen over, and I walked down to the surface, and I climbed back up, and I said to my friend John, this is perfect. And we went out and skate-skied the Namakagan. We were leaving 30, 40-foot tracks with each ski in a wonderful valley on a blue sky. And I just will never forget that experience.
Wonderful. Andrea, what's your favorite experience?
I would say more in general, it's times where maybe I was out there in a condition that I wouldn't have otherwise been out there. So I remember in college, we got a freak 3-foot football snowstorm in April and got to get the cross country skis out there and go through these giant snow drifts. And other times, you know, it's that sense of accomplishment when it's, you know, 20 degrees below zero and I'm out there running. Cross country skiing is admittedly a little bit cold for me in those
sure.
conditions.
Sure. And Mike, we've got 1 minute left. Tell me your favorite memory of your favorite experience, I should say.
Well, I would say my favorite experience has been volunteering at these events. You know, the CISO Ski Fest up in Ironwood attracts nearly 1,000 skiers, and it's great to be at the finish line and seeing people cross and the sense of accomplishment they have and thanking them for coming to the area and you know, just making sure that they had a good time.
It sounds like whether you participate or you are a spectator, it's something to get you outside and get you enjoying the great outdoors. I want to thank each of you for being here today. This has been a wonderful conversation and inspired me to think a little bit more about ways to get outside. That is all we have time for today on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward, glad to have listeners of the West Side along for the ride. Once again, I'd like to thank our guests, Bruce Steinberg of Silent Sports Magazine, Andrea Larson of Iron Bull, and Mike Scholdes here representing Mecca. Our producers today are Joy Ratch-Kramer and Kate Springer. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer. Rick is also our on-air producer today. Special music today from the Okie Dokie Brothers, Gordon Lightfoot, the Punch Brothers, Billie Holiday, Steve Miller Band, and Horseshoes and Hand Grenades. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program at wpr.org/route51. Next week, what's up with the stock market? A look at your money with guest Kevin McKinley. And in 2 weeks, we'll talk about the biggest news stories impacting listeners throughout the area with Wisconsin Public Radio Rural Communities reporter Rob Menser. Until then, we're headed out of town.
take you.